Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
This episode of EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vonta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vonta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vonta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get a special offer of $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU Startups. That's vanta.com/EU Startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Rob van den Heuvel, the co-founder and CEO of SendCloud. Being among the fastest growing tech companies in Europe, Rob is dedicated to solving shipping globally. How Rob has raised over 200 million euros in funding and built Europe's number one shipping platform with SendCloud? Let's find out. Rob, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invite.
So Rob, growing up in the Netherlands, being surrounded by, you know, the vibrant tech community and its creative energy, how did it all start with SendCloud and what SendCloud is all about?
Yeah. So back in 2010, I was running my online store. I immediately saw that shipping was a big issue. We were doing like 20, 30 orders a day. And we were processing those things by manually entering data into a Windows program of the Dutch Post and then a website of DHL. And we were paying way too much for that as well. So normally a large store pays €2, €2.50 for a shipment. We were paying €7. So at one point we're like, hey, wait a minute, it's unfair. We need to do something about it. That's when we founded SendCloud. So that's how it started. And back then, actually, there was no vibrant tech scene from my perspective. Mm. So it's really something of the last, I think, 6-7 years. So there was no real tech companies around where it was like, oh, this is a big example. You might have TomTom or something. But back then it was already kind of on the decline. But I would say the tech scene and the way people help each other, that really only started in the last couple of 5 or 6 years.
Amazing. And it hasn't always been Eindhoven. You guys founded in Eindhoven and you've been always based there, right?
Yeah, so based here for since, yeah, I come from a small village around Eindhoven, and Eindhoven used to be a big city. So for me, it's like, oh, I think it was 250,000 inhabitants, so it's actually relatively small. But we decided to found a business here, straight out of school, actually. So been there ever since. And of course, we have offices in Munich now, and small office in Madrid, Florence recently I did, London has a small office, our HQ is still in Eindhoven.
Sounds good. So Eindhoven turned out great for you guys.
We thought back then, you can't be the best tech company in Amsterdam, but you can be the best software technology company in Eindhoven. Some of you might know ASML, right? It's like that's of course based at headquartered here as well, right, in Eindhoven. Mm-hmm. So there's a massive chips industry. Semicon is really big here, but software is not the big in Eindhoven.
Sounds good. Rob, so raising 200 million euro is huge. Was the craziest story from your fundraising journey, and was the secret, to like kind of secret sauce to convincing investors to believe in your vision?
Yeah. So actually, the we had one really big round back in 2021 September, right? So it was 150 million, and I think before that was actually quite hard to raise funding. So. Yeah. From pre-seed, actually, we didn't have pre-seed, right? But from seed to Series A, Series B, we were never the hottest startup out there, right? So we always did decently, right? We had like 70, 80% year-on-year growth, never crossed like the 100 back then. T2, D3 or something was hip. So triple, triple, double, 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 right? So everybody's like, okay, you need to have this growth path. We never kind of got there. So we didn't really have that much investor interest. Eventually, we did manage to close 6 or 7 rounds, right? Yeah. But it was always quite hard, actually. So And then the secret to convincing them is, I think it's still a relationship game, right? So what we see with the earlier investors, often they said no to us when we first approached them, right? So let's say we approach somebody for Series A. Yeah. They said no to us, and we maybe 2 years later we approach them for the Series B, and they're like, hey, wait a minute, these people actually executed their plan, they overperformed a bit. And then you generate trust, and in the meantime you keep a bit in touch, right? That's what worked really well for us. I think what we had against us as well when we started, we were like 21, right? So we're now 11 years in business, so it's been quite a ride. But I must say, the earlier phases, I felt people were like, yeah, am I going to give a million to these 22, 23 year olds who could basically be my kids, right? So I think we got a bit of that as well. So we really had to build a bit of a reputation. We had to build trust. We had to continuously keep investors in the loop to be able to close these funding rounds. And then in 2021, it was different, right? So we just came from a COVID peak, right? So e-commerce was exploding, growth numbers were exploding. Massive amounts of investor capital flowing into the broader market, and we I think we're fortunate enough to get the timing right this time, and we got to choose the right mix of investors, and they're still with us today. And I think that was that was a really good result.
Sounds good. So execution is still the name of the game, Rob, and like kind of delivering on your promises, building trust over time. And then like it's a bit crazy because, you know, like being straight out of uni, super talented, hungry, like nothing calls you back. So you don't have yet, like, I don't know, dads, family, children.
Yes.
And then, like, it's kind of a paradox that it's hard to raise money because you're 21. And, like, I don't know, it should be. I hope it's changing.
I think so. It is getting better, right? But I mean, it should be hard to raise money, I think, when you have no credentials, right? So you would need to prove a bit that you can actually build a business. I mean, there are a lot of businesses who like want to raise a large check pre-revenue, and I would be like, yeah,
true.
Build an actual business first, right? Unless you need, of course, to build something really complex, which needs lots of revenue. But then, it might be, you need some credentials. So at least that was my experience. US, it might be different.
100%. Rob, so scaling SendCloud must have come with some, you know, tough calls. What was the hardest decision you've made that paid off big time, or maybe didn't?
if you run a business for 11 years, you made a lot of mistakes, right? Yeah. And actually, I believe that's where you learn. One of the key success factors, I think, of building a business is that you're adaptable, that you're willing to change, and you get everybody else to change as well, especially if you go from like 10 to 100, from 100 to 300, and then to 500. And it's quite an interesting journey. If you look at harder decisions that paid off, I think there were a couple of business model, I would say, maybe pivots that paid off for us, right, which were hard. So back in 2017, we were still running a business on the model where we buy in bulk from, let's say, DHL, right? We tell DHL that you ship 10 million parcels with you, give us a discount based on that high volume. So we got a discount, right? So an example, right? So normally you pay €7 for a package. We would pay €5 for a package, and we would charge our merchant €6. Yeah. So back in the time, that model was scaling nicely. But eventually, we are running into larger and larger stores who had cheaper rates than us. And our rates couldn't go down anymore. So the carriers were like, you're not going to get a lower rate than this. And then we decided to build a complete software model around that, right? So we decided to build a subscription-based model where people pay for the software and only the software. And that actually, I think, cost us maybe millions of revenue in the short term, because if you make a euro per package on your old model and you make 10 cents per package on the new model, you can do the math. But I think in the long run, it enabled us to sign larger and larger clients and enabled us to scale a lot faster. So I would say one of these is very good. That's a good example. And another one, I think, is we overscaled after raising a large funding round in 2021, I think as many others did. But anyways, I was there, so my responsibility, I think, then laying off a group of actually really talented people. That was a real shitty experience. And I hope that never happens again. Of course, you need to lay off poor performers. I think that's, yeah, that's yeah. easier, I think.
That's a hard job.
But yeah, it's never easy to let go of a group of actually really good people who you've built relationships with over the years and who built a business together with you. So,
I mean, both. Like hiring and firing people is probably one of the hardest jobs every CEO has to do.
Yeah, I think the hiring of people who execute, right? It's like let's say they produce something. That's easier than, I think the real trick is to hire leaders, and that's extremely hard. So we made so many mistakes there. So you get better at it because you know what you need to look for. Also, you get to learn how you need to onboard. I remember, let's say we hire, this is an example, let's say we hire a chief revenue officer. Uh-huh. I used to think, oh, these people know their stuff. You don't need to onboard them. They just, they'll run their own stuff. Mm-hmm. No, you don't. You need to really onboard them. You need to guide them maybe even more than somebody who actually does the work. So otherwise they'll make really weird decisions or the wrong ones, which was something you already tried 3 times before. And so both, I think, on the hiring side, that's leaders are hard. I think people who execute, I think, is easier. Yeah. And later stage, it actually gets even harder because everybody can tell a really good story. And
Rob, so your no bullshit culture sounds awesome to me.
Thanks.
Was there a moment when it was really put to the test? And how did you stick to it?
Yeah, to me, it's there's not like one moment. It's continuous, right? So it means you should have the hard conversations with each other, right? So whenever, let's say you and me, we have a problem. In many other companies, people will not confront each other, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to talk to my colleague, friend here, and I'm going to tell, oh, yeah, I don't like Martin. So something like that. Yeah. And for us, right, it's continuous people. It's maybe a bit confrontational sometimes, right? It doesn't need to be hostile, but I think it's very direct. We check for that during the interview process, but also during performance reviews. And I think the biggest impact thing is still the leadership you hired. They are no bullshit. Yeah. That they are direct, they're open, they share what they want to share, they don't take credit for other people, they are low ego. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you hire somebody who is not that, and then you need to let them go quickly, because otherwise you're like, this is the terrible to the culture. So culture is not like, oh yeah, this is one thing where you really got put to the test. Yeah, maybe when scaling really fast, it's hard to maintain the culture. So if you're adding 20-30 people a month, it's a lot of change to digest every single month, and then it gets extremely hard to maintain that kind of culture.
So Rob, you also have got a toss of careers on board. How do you keep them all in line, and what happens if they mess up?
The DHLs of the world, I think they so we have around 100 of them on our platform, and everybody makes mistakes, them of course as well, the same goes for us. I wouldn't say we keep them in line, right? So if they make a mistake, they make a mistake. And the customer sometimes sees us as the one who's making a mistake. It's not us, but of course they're paying us. So I get that they come over to us. But we have a team negotiating, of course, deals with the carriers, but also their SLAs, right? So deliverability, response time on questions and queries. So there's a team of 5-6 people, was led by my co-founder Sabi, who maintains all of these relationships, make sure the contracts are okay, make sure they respond to our questions whenever something does go wrong. And then we're now these days going into the world where if a package has an issue, right? We have so much data around that now that we can just say, forget about it. We're 99% sure that this thing will never turn up again. So instead of waiting for the shipping company to give us a response that it's missing, we just pay out the full claim amount already to the to our merchants, right? To just add a bit of speed. So we're trying to kind of enhance their service as well.
Sounds good. Sounds like you got them all in check, Rob.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you can get DHL or UPS to be in check.
Yeah, 100%.
So, or the local posts, they're also interesting.
Yeah. Rob, to kind of getting back to the funding piece, you know, having big investors like SoftBank must be a lot of pressure. How do you keep them happy without losing your own vision?
Yeah, look, I think we're quite fortunate with SoftBank and L Carrollton. I think they led our last funding round and they're super supportive. So both on the SoftBank side and the L Carrollton side, we chose them because we had a lot of choice back in that round for the people who were there, right? So because it's like, okay, I want to work with these people. So I think they're supportive. They help us out wherever needed. And what I do think, what brings pressure, of course, is the money, right? You want to do good for your employees. You want to do good for your customers. And you want to do good for the investors as well. So it means if you raise, right, you're going to need to pay that back at least 2 to 3 times over, right? So if you raise 200 million, okay, great. Everybody celebrates that, but it means, okay, good. So how are you going to pay that amount 2-3 times back to them? That's how I tend to think about it. So it's, but I think the relationship is good. The funds are helpful. I hear lots of horror stories, right? Where the board is a mess or something. I don't have any of that. So I'm really lucky, maybe. So, and then I would say what I do about it is I try to keep the relationship with those people really good, right? So I think if you have a shitty board of investors as a founder, it's kind of your own fault, right? Yeah. You chose those people to be on there. So 100%. Yeah, I would say deal with it in that case.
Rob, you already talked about it a bit in terms of, you know, hard times and hard decisions. But what's your biggest operational fuck up at SendCloud, and how did you bounce back from it?
Oh wow! Yeah, I would say there are many. So we continuously fuck up. I think the one of the biggest there are so many. One of the biggest ones was actually very early in our journey, right? Mm-hmm. When we just had one carrier, which was the Dutch Post, and they pulled the plug. Like after we're 6 months in business, so we had like 150 clients actively shipping on our platform. We are super happy. Me, Boston Sabi, we're just the three of us. Yeah. And then they pulled the plug. Boom. Couldn't do anything anymore. Kind of killed the platform. And then you had to renegotiate with them. You have to sit with them. It took us 3-4 months. We could have just stopped back then, right? Yeah. Because like, hey, wait a second. The postal companies don't like us. They're kind of trying to kill our product in... when it's really small. So, but then you just push through, right? First thing you think, oh shit, what the hell is going to happen right now? How do we get over this? But then you just start with a couple of smart people, you think of a plan and you get out of that, right? So, but that's in the early stages. And these days, I think that the fuck-ups they're still there. But they are more expensive actually than mm-hmm. but they're at this scale, it doesn't kill your company, right? So I think that could have killed our company when it was back in 2013. It could have completely.
Yeah. So maybe let me ask a follow up question to that. What's your most expensive fuck up?
we swapped at one. This is going to be a bit technical, but you have like DDP is delivery basically, deliveries duties paid, which means all the duties and taxes are paid by the shipper, right? Mm-hmm. And you have DAP. Where all the duties and taxes, let's say if you ship internationally, you need to ship duties and taxes, are paid by the person on the door. And we swapped those. which means we paid 600K of additional, we paid 600K of 2PS and our merchants didn't pay anything. And those kind of mistakes you make. And it's actually one or two letters, right? Which got swapped by our engineering team.
Right.
And then you notice that a month later, it's because we ship these high volumes this time, it makes a massive impact. So that happened. And then at one point also we had a DHL and we swapped the sender with the receiver address. Something went wrong in the code, right? So we swapped. And again, we shipped like 14,000 packages on that day back in 2015 with DHL. And it was a mess. So again, that's a couple of, there are a couple. These days we have a proper testing in place, stuff works. But yeah, you learn with these kind of expensive mistakes.
Exactly.
All of that, right? So
you learn the most out of it, you learn as you go. Cool. Rob, thanks for sharing. Looking back, any moments you wish you could redo, and what advice would you give to your younger self just starting out?
Good.
No, I wouldn't do a I wouldn't redo a lot, because I think it got me to the position I am today, where I'm quite happy and I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. So the one thing I might have changed is, like, okay, whenever we raised a large funding round back in 2021, right, I wish we just listened to some of the advice, right? So some people were telling me, Rob, the first 20 million you're going to burn, and I'm like, dude, we never burned 20 million. We only burned through like 5 million in our existence before that round. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, no, we're not like that. And I can tell you, we burned through the first 20 million faster than you can imagine. And you think 20 million is a lot of money, but it's actually 150 people for a year, right? So then it's gone. So I think we could have used that now way better, right? For example, we just announced that we are going to acquire an Italian competitor. We announced that yesterday, and I think back in 2021 you couldn't win the market with money. Uh-huh. And it's going to sound really weird, but I think back in 2024 you actually can win a market if you have cash. Uh-huh. And we still have a lot of cash sitting on our balance sheet. I think we're fortunate, but I mean, we could have done that a lot better.
Gotcha. Rob, what's next for SoundCloud?
Yeah.
Can you give us a sneak peek into any upcoming initiatives or innovations that you've got going on?
Yeah, so of course we're acquiring a couple of companies, right, throughout Europe to scale up. If you look more on the innovation side, we're kind of building like a Shopify kind of ecosystem around our platform, where other solutions plug into our core systems. Mm-hmm. And we push a lot of merchants to them. You can, for example, there are lots of these returns platforms out there these days, and they build on our infrastructure and we send them a lot of merchants. So you're going to see a bit of a Shopify like ecosystem. Uh-huh. Another thing we're putting a lot of our effort in is something we call smart shipping. Mm-hmm. And since we have all of the data of these shipments going around Europe, hundreds of millions of them, we kind of know which shipment is the greenest, has the highest quality, which has the most issues with support, which is the most cost effective, which is the fastest. And eventually, you as a merchant, it's an online store, you don't want to think about it. And you as a consumer, you also don't want to think about it. You just want your shipment whenever you are. Maybe you're at home, maybe you want it in a locker, you just want to have control, right? And one of these big ass projects is that we kind of start routing all of that fully automatically for our merchants, without them ever thinking about which carrier they use or which method is the best one for a shipment from Barcelona to Eindhoven, for example.
Nice. Rob, before I let you go, this is going to be the last one. What are you all about when you're not building the number one shipping company in Europe?
This is interesting, right? So I think I am working a lot these days. So what I do when I'm not at work, I would say I tend to work out, but it's also to keep my mind sane for the job. So I think this is kind of like being in a sport, right? Somebody who's in the Olympics. I'm just focused on the business this time. Of course, I have a nice personal life, I have a nice girlfriend, I have dogs, I have the occasional beer with my friends and a nice barbecue. But I think the main focus at this time is just building and scaling the business, because it eats so much of my, I think, brain power and time at this point in life. Maybe in a couple of years down the line, I'll tell you, I did some investments, I bought some real estate. But for now, it's just building and scaling the business.
Got it. Rob, thanks so much for the time that you took to spend this 30 minutes with us.
Thanks,
it's been a lovely conversation. I could talk to you for hours. I can't wait to have you again in Barcelona, maybe soon, and grab some drinks and dinner together. And I'll also let you know when I'm in Eindhoven. Maybe you finally will give me a proper tour, because I never had that.
Will do. Thanks a lot, Martin, for the interview and for the questions. I appreciate it. Super nice.